Good morning, everyone. Welcome to our roundtable for Sunday, January 17th, 2016, and the subject is life. The golden text is from Romans. The Spirit is life because of righteousness. We will are going over to Science and Health part momentarily. I wanted to ask Florence, is there anything particular you wanted to speak about? I'll have to put people on.
No, I think there's just stuff on the forum where they're interesting. Some posts on the forum were good.
Yes. Joseph, I don't know if you have it handy, but you have looked up the beautiful definition in the Webster's 1828 Dictionary of Righteousness.
Yes.
Can you give that to us? I have part of it written in my book if you don't.
Yes, Webster's 1828 says righteousness is firstly purity of heart and rectitude of life, conformity of heart and life to the divine law, righteousness as used in scripture and theology, in which it is chiefly used, is nearly equivalent to holiness, comprehending holy principles and affections of heart, conformity of life to the divine law. It includes all we call justice, honesty and virtue, holy affections. In short, it is true religion. And then there's three other points as well. It says, apply to God the perfection or holiness of his nature, exact rectitude, faithfulness, the active and passive obedience of Christ, by which the law of God is fulfilled, Daniel 9:7. And then it says, justice, equity between man and man, Luke 1:75, and the cause of our justification, the Lord our righteousness, Jeremiah 23:6.
Thank you. And that is the true definition of righteousness, and it applies to life. And we were talking about briefly a little bit about the self-righteousness stuff, which is actually the exact opposite of true righteousness, the self-righteousness where you feel you are right, and again, you have this selfhood apart from God. Real righteousness is in accord with God, purity of heart and rectitude of life, conformity of heart and life to divine law. So that's when you line yourself up with God, true righteousness. And it is true religion, therefore it can be expressed by anyone, anywhere. You don't have to necessarily have the title of a Christian Scientist. In fact, many, many don't. Yet they live a very righteous, pure, and good life.
I thought also it was interesting the use of the word because here, the way it's translated. Did anybody think of what that really means here in this sentence? I mean, I think it's important to get a really good scientific understanding of what this sentence is really saying. What does the word because mean in this context?
You have a spirit of life because of righteousness.
All right. But take the word because as to be and cause.
Could you substitute the word do as in D-U-E?
Well, in Christian Science, I mean, what does anybody have an inspired thought about this?
And Joseph?
Spirit of life is as a result of righteousness.
There's a reason why we have life. That is to be in conformity to the law of God, not to just exist.
How about being in humble service to God is righteousness and life?
Yeah. Well, I just thought what came to me was the Spirit is life for the cause of righteousness. In other words, the Spirit is life for the sole purpose of righteousness. Cause. I mean, God is the only cause and creator, right? In fact, that's one of the subjects of one of our lessons. What is the cause for life? There's only one cause, and that is righteousness. So I thought, this is telling us, this is why we're here.
And it's such an important point, because many people are living their lives, I think it was Thoreau who said, lives of quiet desperation. And I felt that's what my life was for a long period of time until I found this truth, really found what it is. You will lead that kind of a life, and that's why so many people are drugged up, the Adam dream. Until you find your life in God, you can't be happy. You can't, because life is in God, and it has to be. You have to find that. It's living, as the definition says, conformity of heart and life to the divine law. And then along with that, of course, love alone is life. You can live in accordance to the law, but that law is also all the laws of love, loving your neighbor as yourself. That idea of love has to be, or you're really not living, you are existing. So if anyone who listens to this feels that they are existing or that they are leading a life of quiet desperation, then that can certainly change, and change quickly, because that's not the truth of your being. Your being is to live in God, for God. Once you find that, everything changes. Just wonderful.
I'm remembering the story of Mrs. Eddy. As she was passing, she scribbled on a piece of paper, God is my life.
Yeah.
And I think that's why... Oh, sorry.
Go ahead, Florence.
No, I think I'm thinking of Christ Jesus is saying, I lay down my life that I might take it again. Is this my, our life as this material existence, to give it up or give the sense of it up and to find life as God, like you said. That's what is limitless, abundant life, like Christ Jesus said, I came to give. And so this thing about I have my being in God is a good way that I think of it.
Yes.
I was thinking about the subject of the lesson. We talk about righteousness. Personally, I think for me, it's my biggest challenge. I think all of us can reflect on that. Because righteousness is expressing God, and then it's not something I can do or we can do it. In part, like we can choose a portion of it and do something that has to be done fully. Like Joseph was reading all those components of righteousness. To be a child of God, to be a true Christian, to be righteous, and that's to express God in His fullness. It's not something we can choose a path we can do and what we cannot do. And it's a big challenge, and we all have to do it.
Yeah, because if I think that I have a choice, that I can choose to live either a righteous life or an unrighteous life, if I think I have that choice, I'm really fooling myself. But I don't have a choice. I think I can live an unrighteous life. Well, that's the wide, you know, that's the wide way that doesn't lead to, it's not the straight and narrow way. I'm just going to reap what I sow.
Yeah, Mrs. Sebi and Jesus Christ honestly two examples of it. Because this woman, she did get all her life for this cause, and she didn't leave any space for error. The beginning to the end, that's the way I understand her life to be. I didn't know anything else, but the way I saw it, she was a complete picture of righteousness. So was Jesus Christ.
And they showed us how.
Yeah.
And they asked us to do the same. For our own good.
Yeah, and Benjamin's point that you can't pick and choose. I'll be righteous for a few hours. I'll be righteous when I come to church or, you know, to present a righteous picture to people. And then when I go home, maybe I won't be so righteous. You can't do that. I mean, maybe you fool some people, but you certainly will never fool God. God is not mocked. So it is always to live that righteous life the best that you can. The best that you can. And that's all God requires. And maybe some things you thought were okay, at one point in your life, you will find you outgrow them. I mean, Tom would talk about that, things he once liked, Tom from New York. And then eventually they just didn't mean so much to him. And you just don't do it anymore. It's a gradual unfoldment of good. It's not like people are grabbing things from you. In Science and Health, citation 10, Zetti says, the scientific sense of being, forsaking matter for spirit, by no means suggests man's absorption into deity and the loss of his identity, but confers upon man enlarged individuality, a wider sphere of thought and action, a more expansive love, a higher and more permanent peace. We need to shout this from the rooftop. Why?
Because it's the truth about everyone.
Yes. And what do most people think, though?
And there's so much in the world that is telling us the opposite. Look somewhere else for peace. Look somewhere else for love.
And sometimes people think they have a lot of stuff, and they're going to be entirely, they're going to lose. But you don't. You find it's better. That's it. They think you're going to have to lead a life of, you know, nunnery or something. and give up everything that you ever thought was fun in life or good. And that is a ploy of the devil. That is absolutely not the truth.
It's definitely not the truth. You know, I've been here 2.5 years, and it's challenging and it's fun, and it, even when there's a hard time, there's always, you know that it will get better. I never had that before. I didn't think it would get better, and it wasn't going to get better. So,
I think citation 11 too. In Science and Health, it says, mortal man can never rise from the temporal debris of error, belief in sin, sickness, and death, until he learns that God is the only life. So here we have it. Got no choice.
I think citation 7, in the first part of the Bible, citation 7 and 11, which says to open the blind eyes, to bring out the prisoners from the prison, and them that sit in darkness, out of the prison house, for this commandment which I command thee this day, it is not hidden from thee, neither is it far off, tells us that we have an obligation to do something and to work, rather than just sit back and expect to spiritualize situations, to make them somehow godly, that we clearly have work to do.
And it also talks about spirit in citation 7, you know, about, and this is what I think is spirit and understanding to go with that. We must not hide the talents of spiritual healing under the napkin of its form. If we don't have the spirit, we can't do the healing. We could quote the science and health backwards and forwards, but we wouldn't heal if we don't understand what we're doing. So that's humility.
Yes, several things there. Humility, love.
And how do you gain the understanding?
You gain the understanding by going back to what we talked about with righteousness, you know.
What does that mean?
Quiet.
What does
that mean? We shut out, you know, the outer senses so that we can hear what God is saying to us. That's what Mary Baker Eddy did as she was revising the science of health. She asked, Father, Mother God, what should I do with you? Not what I, human being, want to do. So it was spiritually written, the science of health. The closer she got to what she was listening to.
Well, that's the first step. But you don't gain the understanding until you do what?
Demonstrate.
You obey what God tells you. Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's very key. That's why we've talked about this before, but people who complain they don't understand it. Well, that's because they haven't stepped out and started to live it. You can't sit in a chair and think about it and expect to understand it. You've got to start doing it, and then it will click and say, oh, yeah, now I get it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. It's like when something comes up, use what the truth that you've learned. It's a, you know, as if the truth is here and then the problems are here. No, we have to use what we are understanding, no matter how small.
Because it has to be your experience. There's nothing real. It's not like something outside of you. Christian science is not something outside of any of us. It has to be our experience and on our daily life. For me, I think that's what understanding is. You cannot understand Christian science by looking at somebody else to demonstrate that for you or to experience it for you. Righteousness, Christian science living has to be everyone's experience on a daily basis. And if you are not experiencing it, through the expression of God with one another or with yourself, I don't think you understand anything at all.
There's a phenomenon that I have experienced, I think most of us have, and that is, we used to have classes, you know, weekly when Mrs. Evans was around, similar to our round table here in Bible study. And I can remember many times I'd come out of a class feeling, this is just wonderful. I feel like I've really, you know, learned a lot. And the next day, invariably, something would come at me, some kind of a problem, some kind of a challenge, test whether I really got what I was being taught or not. And sometimes it was pretty tough, you know, caused me to doubt. So the tests are going to come as you grow. But it's like being in school. Earth is, you know, a school. Our experience here should be like school. You learn, and then you take a test. If you pass the test, then you understand something, and you're ready to learn more.
Yeah, you've proven you've understood the principle, and that changes all these beliefs that you've had into true understanding. And it also says in the lesson, we must receive the divine principle in the understanding and live it in daily life, which is just what we've been talking about. And unless we do so, we can no more demonstrate science than we can teach and illustrate geometry by calling a curve a straight line or a straight line a sphere. It's just all talk. You haven't proven it. And so prove it. And you know what Benjamin said about your own experience. You're given your own experience. That's what makes you a unique individual. Someone going to say something?
Yes, I was going to say something about the Deuteronomy 20 that came to me this morning, that thou mayest love the Lord thy God, and that thou mayest obey his voice, and that thou mayest cleave unto him. And I looked up cleave unto him in Webster, and it said, to penetrate or pass through. And that was just an eye-opener, and I thought, my gosh, we have to live much closer to God. For in him, you know, the Bible says, for in him do we live, move, and have our being. Is that helpful? I don't know if it is or not, but it was helpful to me this morning.
No, it's very helpful because this is what science is all about. It's our relationship with God that nobody can ever take away from you.
That's expressing your oneness, and your oneness is where you no longer think about God as something far off, but you know that you are good because he is good. You are wise because he is wise. You're demonstrating that oneness, and it does penetrate through.
And we are part of him.
Yeah, we're not God, but God expresses himself through us.
And that is the safest place to be.
I was thinking, if I go out on the street and I see a different picture than the picture that God sees, I'm not living a righteous life. If I see a sick person instead of a perfect man that God sees, how am I reflecting God? What is the righteousness in me at that moment? Well, if I wake up, I would say, oh my God, I'm not living it. Until I change that picture in myself, not only helping myself at that moment, I'm probably healing somebody at that moment too, because that's the only way I can help somebody across the street.
That is wonderful, and that is so true. And this is where you have ample times and moments throughout the day to be demonstrating and using this truth. And you're either doing it or you're not. And Benjamin just gave a good illustration of that. I remember reading recently where Mrs. Eddy had looked somewhere and seen a drunk man, and she turned away from it and prayed and said, Dear Father, forgive me for seeing something that you did not create. And that healed the man. So when you go out throughout your day, you think of these things, and you're either using the science or demonstrating it moment by moment, or you are not. And when you are not, and then some big thing comes into your life, you go, oh gosh, oh, where's God? And you're just a big mess because you haven't been living it moment by moment. You live it moment by moment, those things probably won't even happen, and if they do, you'll be prepared for them because you'll be in the spirit, so to speak.
I think being in the spirit is such a key word, because just that example of cleave today and mimetai yesterday, when I first saw mimetai, it's like it must be a misspelling because I didn't see it in the lesson. But the spirit of it is that I tried and tried for many years to live, but there's this shared spirit from the one divine mind that comes to us from people who have either more experience, or it's that imitation, or trying to imitate, and the unseen that is so key here. And I think this is where it has to be shared among people, because, like I said, for years I tried to do this on my own, and it was better than taking part in the board's culture of reading their lessons, but it still didn't give me that inspiration that I've gotten in the last 6 months, you know, through these Bible lessons and Bible studies and roundtables.
And your motive was pure, and that is how you—that is why you found the right sense of Christian Science.
And you know, as our new website is going out and it's becoming more accessible, please include it daily in your prayers and in your watching. that it will find the receptive heart, and they will be led here. It's most important that we do this work, and we only want those that God brings. But there is a need of laborers in his field. The field is white with harvest. The harvest time has come. And he says there are few laborers, so we will pray for those right ones. So far, he certainly has brought us wonderful workers. I'm so grateful for that. So, Mike?
I was just going to say that years ago, through a lot of issues and things, my way of dealing with it was to teach myself to not love. Because if I didn't love something, if it disappeared, then I wouldn't have a loss. That was my reasoning. And coming here, seeing, sensing this amazing, not a human love, but a spiritual love that is shining forth, has led me to where now I realize that if I could unteach myself to love, then seeing this example of love from others, now I can teach myself again to love. And, so that's inspiration from God through others that has come to me, which I'm so grateful for.
Thank you,
Megan.
Go ahead, Fairly.
For me, it came to me, Plainfield is a miracle, for which I'm infinitely grateful.
Well, thank you.
And the right definition of miracle is a marvel, not something that's humanly impossible, but a
right,
marvel.
Right, and Mrs. Eddy says that it should be natural. Divinely
natural.
Yes, divinely natural. There's a beautiful poem that we've had in our magazine called Teach Me to Love. I have to have it again. It's a beautiful poem by that woman with a great big long name. Something. Yeah, Dania. Yeah, right. It goes on and on. Anyway, she wrote a beautiful poem. And I know it's times in my life when I felt that I didn't know how to love. You can pray that. Father, teach me to love. Teach me thy way. Help me to get out of this human sense of love, which will shut off. I mean, what Mike described is very common. I know of others. I'm sure I've done it myself. You just try not to love so you never get hurt or you never lose. But, of course, that's all the human sense, the Adam dream, the love that turns on and off or can turn to hate, not the love that just shines as the sun shines, as God loves, the unconditional love. But we can pray that prayer, Dear Father, teach me to love. Mrs. Eddy's definition of man in the glossary says that we are the image of love. Therefore, we have the ability to love. Just ask God for it if you feel you don't have it. All of these things are
beautiful.
It is.
Or imitate his love.
I'm always struck by the fact that Jesus himself, in the garden, when he asked if this cup could be taken away from him, and even when Lazarus died, his friend, the Bible says that he wept so much, even though he was about to demonstrate the marvel of bringing him back. Obviously, his sense of humanity was overwhelming him, and it proves to me that, as Mrs. Eddy described him, the greatest scientist that ever trod the globe, struggled with these things also.
He cared deeply, and that caring also enabled him to whip the money changers out of the temple. He did it because he cared. If he didn't care, he wouldn't have done it.
And he wept at that moment, not just because of Lazarus. He wept because the people around him still didn't get the message that he was giving them. He wept for all mankind. but they all still believed that Lazarus had died. That's why he wept, because his love was so great and so divine.
To get back to Benjamin and experiencing, each one of us has been given us individual experiences, and you must embrace those experiences, love them, and learn as much as you can about God through those experiences. If you don't, if you envy someone else's experience, or you, this is easily done, and this is why we make sure there's no personal worship. This is why Mrs. Eddy wouldn't allow it. We're, oh, she's so wonderful, she's so great, or Jesus is so wonderful, and there, he's so great. Therefore, you know, I have nothing to do except adulate another person. Now, that is denying your own experience. Embrace your experience. You are you. You are individual. Do you think you're alone in this? God has given you your experience, and you can either, as they say, make a lemon of it or lemonade out of it. So take your experience. Love your experience. You're very foolish not to. And I've heard people who are always comparing themselves or this or that instead of loving their own experience. You can love your way out of anything. Love is the liberator. So take your experience and know it's divine. It will lead you to all good if you love it. And that's in the lesson too. I have to find it. But she talks about, this task, the human self must be evangelized. This task God demands of us to accept lovingly today and to abandon so fast as practical the material and to work out the spiritual, which determines the outward and the actual. You have to accept it lovingly. You can't complain about your experience. I don't care what it is. We've all been given lemons. I don't mean to defame lemons, but that sense of the word. Sometimes you get something in life that's not so great, but you accept lovingly. Okay, Father, this is a problem. You're going to help me work it out. I will learn from this experience. Sometimes the people who have been given the hardest knocks do what?
Not the best.
Yes.
The most.
Look at Paul. Look at Paul.
I mean, what does Mrs. Eddy say about trials?
God's care.
They are proofs of God's care. That's the way to look at them.
Yeah. Your experience is unique. Love your experience wherever you are. Love it. If you love it, you will find yourself growing and learning, and pretty soon, whatever bad experiences you seem to have been having will be turned, as I said on Wednesday, God will turn them to gold. But if you hate your experience, or you envy someone else's experience, or you adulate someone else's experience, you just stay where you are, or worse. Embrace in life what you have and be grateful for it. And God will turn it.
The question is always, how does God see this, rather than how do I see it? How does God see this issue? It's what I find myself going back to, this, there's some issue of experience or something I find difficult to manage or face, to remind myself that how I see it in terms of my senses is not accurate, but how God sees it tends to put things into perspective.
Yes, and of course, God doesn't see anything problematic at all. He sees perfection.
And ask God, God, what do I need to learn? What do I need to see more clearly? What do I need to do for you better?
That will always lead you aright.
Because it's clearing the mist, isn't it? God's perfection is there. His work is done. He's pleased with his work. And if I'm not seeing God's perfection, well, I just, the mist is getting in the way, and
yeah,
I need to clear away the mist.
When I first came here, I built a wall because I had an experience that hurt me, so I built a wall so I wouldn't love, and I couldn't get hurt. And I remember a practitioner giving me a rebuke, and I put the wall up. And then I realized that it was a blessing. So when I get a rebuke, I would say mentally to myself, thank God that she loved me enough to correct this. And that knocked down the wall. And every situation, I try to go back to that and see that it's love and it's a blessing. Thank you.
Perfect.
I want to talk briefly, too, about the term absolute and relative, because yesterday we got into, you know, how imperfect we all are. And it is in the lesson, imperfect mortals must grasp the ultimate of spiritual perfection slowly, but to begin aright and to continue the strife of demonstrating the great problem of being is doing much. So at this stage, I mean, we can say we're not perfect, but as we know, God knows of us as being perfect, and when we work for ourselves, we should start from perfection, perfect God, perfect man, perfect universe, not some mortal struggling, but knowing right here and right now we are perfect. These are terms, absolute and relative. Mrs. Eddy uses them throughout Science and Health, and it's important to be aware of it. If you are dealing, you have to be mindful of your audience, too. Because if you're dealing with someone who knows nothing of science and you go around telling them you're perfect, they will think you're cuckoo. And scientists do that, so that's why I'm saying this. Or that you are sinless or whatever. You have to be careful with those terms. The story, we've told it before, but the woman who came in to Mrs. Eddy, who obviously had a cold, and Mrs. Eddy asked how she was, and what did the woman say?
She was fine.
Yep. She said she was fine. And what did Mrs. Eddy say?
You're not fine.
She said, you are not fine. Tell the truth about the lie. And I mean, I've seen that too, where you'll see someone, obviously, a Christian Scientist in all kinds of pain or trouble or sorrow. I'm fine. Oh, I'm okay. Well, no, don't say that. You don't. You can't. That's silliness. It's not common sense, and it gives Christian Scientists such a name of dingbat, frankly. That was so just be mindful. We speak in various ways, and also when someone speaks, to understand the gist of what they're saying. Maybe they're not speaking in the absolute, but understand the gist of what they're saying, or if they are speaking in the absolute, understand that too. I knew of someone, and actually she was a member of our church for a while. She's no longer here. Anyway, she told me when she was a child, she was raised by a father who was a Christian Scientist, and they were not allowed to use any like words like death or sin or disease. They weren't allowed to use any of those words as a child. She never heard of it. She was shielded from anything that might appear to have died. So when she got into school, it was like, holy Moses. It was a shock. Now, that is taking it to quite an extreme. And so we have to be, we are in this world, but not of it. And when we talk like that, we say it sounds otherworldly. And it can be a jargon. So we make sure that we know who our audience is and how we are expressing everything. I mean, we can all just say, well, and that is one of the peeves of the culture where they go around and God is good and God is love and everything's wonderful. In the meantime, their house is burning down and all kinds of stuff is going on and everything's wonderful. Well, no, it's not wonderful. Not wonderful till you prove that it's wonderful. You don't just skip over all that.
But it's time to also say that, no, I'm not sick. after you know, you should have some understanding of what you're talking about. So then when Mrs. Eddy says that when the feeling comes that you're sick, you are to say, I am not sick, but you do it with understanding of, that you're talking about the understanding.
Yeah. Right. Mrs. Eddy gives us, in Science and Health, the complete truth of what God made. She also gives us a whole lot of help and useful guidance as to how to get from where we are now to where we clearly see and understand what God made. And some of us still have quite a ways to go, quite frankly, and I'm grateful for the relative statements that are helpful in getting me from where I am to having a better understanding of what God made.
And that is truly the beauty of Condon Purpose. And I've mentioned it many times, but you all should know it and be very familiar with those three stages she talks about, the three baptisms. So, we keep it real here. We're not otherworldly. We're real. Otherwise, it's intellectual. It sounds great on an intellectual basis, but that's all it is intellectuality. And Mrs. Evans used to like to say the only thing she ever learned from her teacher was that one statement, and that was, intellectuality is the bane of Christian Science. It's just all up there in theory. Lovely theory.
The letter without the spirit.
And it's the letter without the proof. Okay, Tom?
So did Mary Baker say that? I'm sorry if I didn't quite catch that.
No, it's Mrs. Evans' teacher, who was Jean Roe Price.
That's interesting. Okay.
Yeah, she said that was all she got out of her 2 weeks of class teaching. And all that she learned was from her feisty New York practitioner, Nana Ritchie, who was a healer. And that's where she learned the science. Not from sitting 2 weeks in class talking about it, but by her practitioner who proved it to her and showed her how to prove it as well. So, go ahead.
We were just in my 10 days in class instruction. We were just supposed to sit there and just write as fast as we could everything that we were told. I mean, there was no attempt to try to teach us anything.
Mm-hmm. And how did that work out for you?
It was awful because then I felt guilty about the fact that you're supposed to treasure that notebook. Mm-hmm. I finally threw it away.
It gives you a little insight as to why Mrs. Eddy closed the Massachusetts Metaphysical College after only a few years teaching thousands of people. Too many people were graduating thinking that they knew more than they did, and she saw that as a big danger to the movement.
And, you know, we have found here that this weekly going over things is a very good way. Keeping your slate clean, bringing up questions and talking about the lesson, it's a good way to be learning rather than 2 weeks and then you don't see each other for whatever.
I thought about that. Even the Principia College, I think it's operated by Christian Science Organization.
No, it's not.
Well, it's related to it, but why do they have Christian Science? But anyway, my point is...
The people who establish it call themselves Christian Scientists.
Yeah. My point is the same thing goes to even the publications they have in Boston, like monitors or other stuff. In the beginning, I think it was for good purpose, but now I think what is going on now, if it's not producing more Christian Scientists, because that should be the purpose. Any teaching or any school or publication, if it's not producing more Christian Scientists, what's the need of it?
Well, yes, and more spirituality, yeah. You know, a greater understanding of the science, yes. That is the purpose of it. And if it's not doing that, then it's not doing anything. And it, and we think it's why she, in the 88th manual, dissolved just about everything, unless it had her written approval for it.
The thing about the class for me was that it saved me because my teacher was excommunicated, so that's very interesting that she's excommunicated but still working within the guidelines of that whole structure of having classes and associations, etc. So I learned a lot, and that prevented me from probably being so lost that I would have abandoned Christian Science. But I remember very distinctly, carefully asking before going to class, was I going to have to go out and heal somebody? And I was told no, much to my relief. But that is where the problem is and where the difference is that Mrs. Eddy, and then I know some of like Flavia Knapp and Janet Coleman, they always required people to go out and take a case and heal it. And that was the test. And without that, that was where my whole experience, I think, was lost, because I would have either proved that I could heal or I couldn't heal, that I could even find the case in a strange town to heal, et cetera, et cetera. And if I had flunked the test, then it would have been up to the teacher to discern and explain to me where I needed to do it more spiritual or whatever I was lacking. I think that's where the difference is, that today's class is not doing it the way Mrs. Eddy did, which was go take a case and prove it.
Yes, and all of you should be going and taking cases and proving it. And that's really... And whether someone comes to you and that kind of thing is not what I'm talking about. You have all day. Just as Benjamin said, if you see someone on the street who has a problem, that's up to you to heal it. You heal it in your own thinking. You've got to be doing this, and you better be doing this. Otherwise, all this is in vain. This is for you to use and to practice. And yes, to heal. And maybe cases will come to you to be healed in your own family or whatever. You do the best you can. You should be using this. Certainly comes to you, and things always come to you to be healed. I mean, physical problems or, trying to figure something out on the computer. You can always, this is a daily work, task to lovingly accept a day, to be using this science and proving it for yourself. Otherwise, it is useless and worthless. So,
and quite really,
tell that. Go ahead, Florence.
Now, I was going to say, this is what I found at Plainfield. For the first time, I could see how this has to be my daily living, my thinking. You know, and Mrs. Evans, I heard, was saying how you should pray before you even read the lesson. Father, help me to understand what I need to know today. All these little things is what the practice, the actual practice of Christian Science began to make sense to me since when I came to Plainfield.
Thank you. Yes, and everything you do, you're either knowing the truth or you're in la-la land. Go ahead, Mike.
And to back that up, that's the added part, and this is why I'm so grateful here, because you were 100% right. Going home and being on my own, I got lost. But here, Bliss Knapp said that you had to hear something 3 times to understand it. And for me, it's like 300 times, so it's wonderful here because you keep repeating these things again and again, and they're finally beginning to sink in. And I'm so appreciative of that.
Yeah, sometimes I wonder about that. Yes. Mrs. Eddy says, what? If the work is not humdrum, dear ones. It is repeating and defeating, repeating and defeating. And I know for myself it took that, and I hear it from you. I might say the same thing week after week, and then suddenly, oh, wow, I got it this time. So it just takes time sometimes to suddenly it'll make sense. And usually it's because of your experience. Anyway, I'm going to close now. We were going to do questions and answers, but the time has come to end. So these are some selections from Message for 1902. Mrs. Eddy, I suggest as a motto for every Christian Scientist, a living, and life-giving spiritual shield against the powers of darkness. And then this quote, great, not like Caesar, stained with blood, but only great as I am good, end quote. The only genuine success possible for any Christian, and the only success I have ever achieved, has been accomplished on this solid basis. And as we learned today, the definition of righteousness, that is good, and it is true religion. So, thank you all for joining us. Thank you, Joseph, for coming all the way from Barcelona. and Uta and Zari from Germany. So, thank you all. We'll have a good service.
God have a great day.